Welcome back to the Wealth Studying Podcast. This is episode 44. It's November 15th, 2014. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager of InvestableWealth.com. In every episode, we focus on one or more of the 10 wealth building principles to help you build, preserve, and grow your wealth so that you can build your personal freedom and liberty. And in this episode, I'm excited to bring you part one of a three-part series, which will consist of edited extracts from a presentation I gave on building wealth from a prepper permaculture perspective. Now, I presented this about a week ago, November 7th, 2014, at the Survival Podcast Fall Workshop. This was held at Jack Spirico's homestead. It was a great event like Jack always holds. I got to meet up with a few old friends and make a whole lot of new ones. And what I wanted to do was share the highlights of my presentation with you so that you can see how wealth-building principles relate to natural systems such as permaculture. And if you're not sure about the prepper lifestyle or what permaculture is, just pay attention during these next three episodes. I'll mostly be speaking about wealth-building, but you'll hear me interject nuggets of wisdom about natural systems, the prepper lifestyle, and permaculture design principles. And if I get some questions or I hear some interest from the audience, I'll probably follow up with an episode or two on my perspective on both prepping and permaculture and how they help me in my life. For now, sit back, relax, and listen to my presentation where I lay out the fundamentals of building wealth, of changing the way you think about money, and how the accumulation of wealth is largely behavioral. So in terms of building wealth, I want you to think in a little bit different terms than you've heard, because you've always heard about this from the industry, and the industries are their salespeople. My friend Jack calls them financial liars. I prefer to refer to my brethren as salespeople, but a difference without a distinction. I want you to think in terms of wealth and money and finances and things in what I'm going to describe to today, and think about the Declaration of Independence, right? Well, that's our founding document. We all want to think we're free. I know whether we live in a free country or not, we can debate that, but we all want to be free Americans, free Canadian. I know at least one of us is a free Canadian out there. When you think of the Declaration of Independence, think of financial independence, right? Because even if you're not a slave to the government, you can be a slave to Chase Bank or Citibank or Visa MasterCard or your mortgage or whoever. You don't need the government to enslave you. And unfortunately, when we're enslaved to debt and the banks and our mortgage, we're enslaving ourselves. So that's the bad news. The good news is you can do something about it, right? So think in terms of financial independence. And freedom is wealth. That's the other thing. When you see things like freedom, replace it with wealth. And when you see wealth, replace it with freedom, because those words are interchangeable. And that, if you change the way you think about this, you'll start changing your habits. And you'll see as we go along, it's really about your habits. So what is wealth? Well, wealth, and this is small, I apologize. Wealth, I'll try to read all these for you. Wealth is the fruit of your labor, right? So when the government wants to tax you and take away your earnings, or when someone wants to say you didn't build that and they want to take it from you, they're taking away what? Your wealth, which is your time and your labor and your talent and your ability. Your time on earth. When you die, you can't take your wealth with you, but you can leave it here and it can do good things after you're gone. So it can become an extension of your life. So think of wealth in terms of it's your actual time, it's your actual labor. And wealth is also, you can think of it in these terms, it's energy, right? And since you're permaculture people, think about that. There are two forms of energy, right? We have kinetic energy and we have potential energy. You can think of that in, are you a consumer or are you a saver? If you're consuming, it's kinetic energy. It's out there, it's used, and although energy can't be destroyed, right, you're passing it on to Walmart or Starbucks or whoever, right? Ford, GM, whoever you're giving your money to, they're taking away your energy in your life. If you want to extend your life, if you want to enhance your life, you need to maybe focus on that potential side, like a spring or like something that where you're building that potential energy. Build that up, and you build that up by building up your wealth. We know from permaculture principles, we want to obtain a yield, right? That's profit, okay? I call that profit. You want to profit. You want to build wealth. You want to build as much potential energy as you can so that you can use it someday for good things and on the consumption side. And the other thing is you want to catch and store energy. Again, think of wealth in terms of energy. When I talk about you wanting to accumulate wealth, we don't want you to be greedy and Scrooge and that kind of stuff. We're talking about you accumulating energy. Why do you accumulate energy? So you can do good things with it, right? You don't want to have to, if you're going to do work, while we all may want to go out and dig in the dirt and do things manually, it's a whole lot more fun to use power tools, right? I can cut, with my herniated disc, I can cut a whole lot more firewood with a chainsaw than my grandfather could with a handsaw and an axe. I like chainsaws. I want that energy. I want to be able to use it. We can only do that with wealth. So think about catching and storing as much money as you can. Not for the sake of money, but for the energy factor.
And this is to illustrate a point. So as I have up here these zones that you would be familiar with, zones 1 to 5, I don't necessarily mean those in terms of our zones. I'm just trying to illustrate a point. These things up here, zone 1, I have, again, you may not be able to see them. These are your preps, savings, emergency fund, food and water storage. You know, food and water to at least make it through the next hurricane or snowstorm, depending upon where you live. 3-4 days worth of food. We're not talking, you know, if you don't have it, you don't have to necessarily go out and get a year's supply tomorrow, but you should be able to have some flashlights in the battery, you know, batteries in the flashlight. These are the emergency, the preps, insurance, life insurance, health insurance. You want to be able to take care of you and your family. Education, be able to educate yourself, invest in yourself. Practical tools, you know, tools that you can use to fix the engine on your car or to be able to sharpen your knives, you know, the different things we talk about here. Seeds, being able to know how to plant. These are all the, and this is investing. This is building wealth. If you're not doing these things up here, then investing in stocks over there in zone 5, it's not going to matter. You need to take care of these things first. Having cash on hand. I'm not opposed to physical metals. I have precious metals up there. You probably want to have those in your preps. But cash, too. I have cash because people, I think, forget about that. The first 3 days, the power's out, $20 bills, $100 bills, they're going to spend. They're still going to buy a lot of things. If the ATMs aren't working, you want to have cash on hand. Those are all your zone 1 kind of things, okay? And we take an extension from that. Real estate, and these are the ways to build wealth, as you see. We'll talk about these as we go. But I have real estate, small business, and social capital. And again, just to illustrate a point, real estate, you want to start, I see your homestead, but you want to start with your home. It could be an apartment. It could be a condo. Wherever you live, you want to start today. Don't worry about what you're going to do in 10 years. Think about where you're at. If you're in an apartment, right, grow some tomatoes or herbs or something on your balcony, right? Start where you're at. Find out a way to consume less electricity. Find out a way to live closer to work so you don't have to waste time commuting back and forth, things like that. So you want to keep your home as close to your zone 1 as you can. You know, Jack and I and Patrick, probably Gary, we all work from home. Man, best thing you can do. If you're not working from home, figure out a way. See if your employer will let you. See if you can work one day a month or something at home. Focus on staying as close to home as you can. It'll build happiness as well as wealth. The other thing I have out here is the other extension is rental property. You can make a lot of money in rental property. It's not something I personally do, actually, because I'm kind of lazy. I don't want to do it. But I know a lot of people that have made money in real estate. But you start with your home first, right? If you can't own your own home, chances are you probably don't want to go out and buy rental property that you don't know anything about. So it's just like anything else. Start where you're at. And I'm just trying to show this staying in zone 1 and 2 because, again, if you're living in New York, you probably don't want to own rental property in zone 5 out in California. Stay close to home. It's easier. Some people can do that. I know your brother-in-law or somebody may have done that. But for our purposes, it's always easier if you keep a real estate as close to home as you can. You know about your community. You know the good places, bad places to buy houses, to do those things. So focus on that. The next thing is small business. And a lot of you may be saying, well, I work for somebody or I don't have a small business. We're going to talk about that as we go because some of the things I'll tell you may surprise you about that. But even with small business, that may extend out farther. You may have to go out farther into zones, right? And we're not talking multinationals. Those are the guys that go way out. But I'm telling you, just from our purposes, again, you want to keep as much of that as home. If you can work from home, if you can figure out how to do things on the internet or have a local community to sponsor you and support you. You know, again, I'm not saying that you shouldn't have clients all over the country. I do that, okay? I probably have more clients out of state than I do in my home state. But it's easier if you focus closer to home. You can take better care of your clients. And then social capital, that's one of those things, though, that the beauty of the internet and the social media and things that we have, we want to build as much social capital as we can. Social capital is as important as real estate or your stock portfolio or anything else. That's your relationships, right? Where does it start? At home. Starts with your family, then your friends, your neighborhood, your community, and it goes on and on. With the internet and basically the freedom we have, free communication, that can extend throughout the world. So you can be making permaculture contacts in you know, Australia or Japan or whatever, and those can be just as viable as what you have here. So really look and try and develop that social capital. And you see way out there in zone 5 is stocks. And I'm not telling you not to own stocks. I make a lot of money off of stocks. I make my living off of stocks. I recommend stocks to other people. But I'm also telling you that's probably one of the later things you want to do. And it's out there in zone 5 where we have no control over it. I can own shares of Apple Computer, but that's all I can do. I can choose to buy them and I can choose to sell them. I can't influence them in any other way. Totally outside of my sphere of influence. These are the things I can control, right? I can control my family, my friends, where I live, what kind of small business I have. And that's really what those are the things you want to focus on. And this is you here in the middle, all these things around you. Again, I don't want you to think in any one term of what stock can I buy? Because everybody wants to know what stock can you buy, right? Or what piece of property should I buy? Or what business should I start? Don't think of what one thing. It's a cornucopia. Just like when we go out and we did our plantings and things here out in the property, we didn't look at just one thing. There's a microclimate. You could be 2 feet away. An apple tree could be right doing just fine right in front of me, and 2 feet, 3 feet away, because of the shadow of the building or one of the overhanging trees or something, it didn't grow. It was very specific, and you had to take it all in as a whole. You need to take your investments in as a whole. You need to take your whole wealth building in as a whole. Everything from, you know, whether you're employing to whether you own your own business, you know, your insurance and your preps, your social capital. Way over here in the corner, I have, that says old age savings, okay? And that's not a spelling thing or anything. We don't even use that word anymore, but that's why I'm specifically using it. I did not say retirement savings. I don't think anybody should ever retire. I don't know why you'd want to retire, but you are responsible to take care of yourself in old age. And we're going to talk about that a little more as we go. But these are really the things that, in my experience, that you want to focus on. You know, your savings for today, your savings for when you're in your old age, real estate, stock, social capital, employment, business, and then your insurance and preps. Many people, unfortunately, most people in our society are slaves. Okay. And we have the food pyramid. Well, think of your wealth pyramid. People don't ever get wealthy because on the slavery side, these are all the things they spend money on. Eat the food, right? And food is mostly eating out or eating prepared foods, utilities and things. And now with utilities, you think of your cell phone, Netflix, cable, all those things you can't live without, right? It's a big chunk of your paycheck they're taking. Your car, your credit card, student loans, your mortgage is probably the biggest chunk. Your cost of housing is the biggest chunk of where you're spending all your money. If you can manage these, to get to that side of things, this is where you get freedom, and particularly, again, in your old age. When you're starting out, yeah, maybe you're going to have student loan debt. Maybe you're going to have a house payment and things. But the end game is not to die broke. I'm telling you, that's the wrong approach. The end game is that in your old age, not your retirement, but your old age, you want to be able to take care of yourself, and the way you'll do that, if that potential energy we talked about, it'll be saved up, and you'll have all this energy for discretionary spending, because you want to really limit yourself at that point beside doing the things you want to do, you want to be able to take care of your food, your utilities, and your medical things. And that was the model for old age retirement years and years ago. That's what my grandparents would have saved up for. Their house was paid for. You know, really all they had to cover was their food, their expenses, their food, your utilities, medical things, and then everything else was discretionary spending. They could afford to take vacations, visit grandchildren, do whatever they wanted to do. You can do the same thing, but you need to focus on how do I get from here to get to that model. The other thing that the beauty about us as permaculturalists, we know that if we're eating better food and, you know, more nutritious food, then we're going to be spending less on our medical costs too, right? So that little sliver can go down. And again, I've seen this. I know my grandfather was, he would have been what we would have called a Permies kind of guy. You know, he lived a very, him and my grandmother both lived a very healthy life, lived well into their 90s. My grandmother 99, my grandfather 96. He farmed a big piece of property. As I walk around this property, it brought back a lot of nostalgia for me, because I thought of my grandparents, the bees, the ducks. That's the way they lived, you know, and it was a great life. So we talked about wealth. Now let's take a step back here. How do we get wealthy? Well, the first thing we do is we avoid poverty, okay? And if I'm going to tell you three simple things for not being poor, and some of you may have heard these before, but these are written in stone. Studies have proved them. Political parties have tried to make different points with them. But if you listen to these three things I'm going to tell you, 98% chance of avoiding poverty, and then about a 72% chance of being solidly in the middle class. Middle class is $50,000. So somewhere between $30,000 and $50,000. If you just do these three things, you can generate that kind of an income. And they're simple, right? Finish high school, get a full-time job, and don't have kids until you're married, right? And preferably you're at least 21 when you decide to get married. But those three things, high school, job, don't have kids until you're married. You do those three things and you won't be on welfare. It's remarkable what those three things can do. But we're not worried about not being poor. We want to be wealthy, right? Because we want to have potential energy. We want to have freedom. So how do we do that? Well, again, it's simple, and everything I'm going to tell you today is simple. And when you hear someone, particularly in the financial business or investment business, telling you something complicated, that's probably not something you want to listen to. It should be simple. You want to break things down into very simple parts. Becoming wealthy is simply an extension of those three simple things, okay? So we're just going to expand on them. Instead of just getting a high school education, we're going to get an education. And I don't say go to college. I say get an education. This is develop an expertise. Put in your 10,000 hours. We'll talk more about what that might be in, but for now, just become an expert in something. So you're getting educated. The next thing is, before it was get a job. Now it's not get a job. It's get paid for your accomplishments, not your time, right? So I don't care if you're making $20, $30, $40 an hour. Forget about the hour part. You want to get paid for your overall accomplishments. That's the only way you're really going to build wealth. The other thing is not enough to have a job, but you have to save, and I have a lot in parentheses. You need to save a lot of your income if you want to get wealthy. It's working on the saving side, not being a consumer. You have to develop investment income. We're going to talk about a lot about that today. And this last one is, the other one was, don't have kids until you're married. Well, this is, you know, just build a loving, cohesive family unit. It's about that social capital we talked about. You start with your family, your neighbors, your community, your friends, and you build from there. Another permaculture principle is, we're going to integrate these two. Again, it isn't like, John, what one thing should I invest in? It isn't one thing. It isn't just one of these are important. You have to integrate them. Focus on the integration part. Don't just try and segregate or segmentate anything. Stack them. Stack these functions. The more of these you can get right, the faster you'll be able to build wealth, and the faster you'll be able to build freedom. Okay, so wealth is behavioral. Bottom line. You don't have to have a high level intelligence. And I promise you, my IQ is nowhere any higher than anybody in this room, and mine's probably lower. Okay. You don't have to, it's not a matter of intelligence. It's a matter of behavior, and you can learn that behavior. And another permaculture principle, self-regulation and feedback. You have to be able to discipline yourself, to have the self-regulation to not consume, not let Madison Avenue or corporations tell you what you need to have, not the wrong peer group pressure. Peer pressure is good, but the wrong peer pressure is bad. And you want to be able to accept that feedback, that criticism. You want to get better. You're never going to get better unless you take criticism. So I want you to meet two of my friends. I'm going to tell you about behavior and how it works. On the left here, we have Country Club Carl. And we're going to make fun of him a little bit. And then we got Mike, the mining engineer, over here. Now, it's going to be fun to make fun of Carl because he's so much not in our circle. But we could just as easily call him, you know, like Tactical Tim, okay? And we could, maybe it'd be a little closer to home if we called him that. I should have done that. But, yeah, all the cool kids have the best ARs and stuff. Well, Country Club Carl, he's a cool kid. You know, he dresses in Armani and Rolex and Gucci and all that kind of stuff. And my other friend over there, Mike... you know, he wears a Timex, he just Levi jeans, he's a mining engineer, right? He doesn't have to dress up fancy. Well, these two guys have very different lifestyles, and these are very real examples. I know a lot about people's personal finances, and so I can tell you with authority about these kind of things. Your typical Country Club Carl guy, you know, he's 50 years old, he's maybe an executive, he could be in a lot of different careers, work for the government, but in my example, he's a corporate executive. He's making $250,000. Average income in America is 50. He's making 250. So he's doing extremely well for himself. He's been to Princeton and Harvard, he's got all these degrees. He's still paying off student loan debts, by the way. And don't laugh. I know plenty of people in their 40s and 50s with much more student loan debt than you'd believe. He lives in a big house. You know, it's a $600,000 house. He has virtually no equity in it, but it is on a golf course, a very nice country club. And he drives around in a car that he leases for like $800 a month. Now, Mike, the mining engineer, he's 50 years old as well. He's still very highly paid compared to the average American, but significantly less than Country Club Carl. Mike's only making, you know, $120,000. Mike went to North Dakota State, paid for it. It cost him, you know, he was able to work part-time through the summer. He was able to work full-time through the summer and part-time through school to be able to fund a degree at North Dakota State. So he went to a very inexpensive school, got a good engineering degree, and that didn't hurt him. That didn't hold him back. He didn't have to go to be a mining engineer. No one in the mine cared if he went to Harvard, right? They wanted to make sure that he didn't like blow something up or get anybody killed. Okay, and he learned that very well at North Dakota State. The other thing is, Mike's house is $300,000. It's well within what he can afford for his salary. And he's nowhere near a golf club. He's much closer to Walmart than he would be a golf club, okay? He's just not in that kind of lifestyle. He drives a Ford pickup truck. He paid cash for it. It's 10 years old. Now, I point all that out to you about their spending habits because you can see they have very different net worths. Country Club Carl, he's a consumer, okay? He has virtually no savings. He's 50 years old. He's going to think about starting to put something away, but he's got to get his kids through school. He's settling up with his ex-wife, so, you know, he's working on that. Mike, the mining engineer, he's got a net worth of nearly $2 million. He would retire, but like he doesn't need to because he lives nearby where he can fish and hunt. He's happy doing what he does. He likes his job. He likes the people he works with. He's not a slave. As much as Country Club Carl makes, he's still living paycheck to paycheck. He's a slave. He has to have that corporate job. Mike can do whatever he wants, but he's happy doing what he does because he likes it. So you have to think about yourself, you know, which one of those guys do you want to be? Which one of those people do you want to emulate? And I'll tell you again, that is not just a random example. Engineers are disproportionately wealthy for their income, and mining engineers are the most disproportionate of any career to be millionaires. And it's because they live more in rural areas. They have mellow lifestyles. They make decent money, and they don't spend. They don't waste it. So that's something you want to think about in your thing. I know a lot of you guys are technical guys. So think of that. You can do well for yourself, but you have to have the discipline. I'm going to give you some simple equations on how to build your wealth. And these are simple. Whether you're rich or poor, these things are going to apply. They're simple because I'm a simple guy, and if they were complicated, I couldn't have come up with them. But they're also simple because they're fundamental and they work. And that's, again, that's the way things are. If things are elegant and simple, then they're probably the truth. So as far as getting actual wealth itself, I told you wealth was freedom, wealth was energy, right? Well, what is it in an actual equation? Wealth is simply earning plus saving plus investing. And it's very critical that you get those in that order. You have to earn before you can save, and you have to save before you can invest. Now, that sounds so simple that I shouldn't have to tell you that, but have you ever turned on like a news channel where they're advertising financial products, and anybody's really ever telling you to earn and save, right? They're telling you to get a bigger mortgage. They're telling you to get this credit card because it has lower interest rates. They're telling you to put your money in the stock market because you're an investor. Well, how do they know if you're an investor? You have to earn and save before you can ever be an investor. So you need to focus on those things. Figure out how to earn money, figure out how to save it. Focus on those two things first. There's no get-rich-quick schemes that are going to work. There's plenty of schemes, but none that work. And you have to do things in this order. Again, another permaculture principle, design principle. Use small and slow solutions, right? You're not going to get rich quick. Every one of you can get rich. It may take you 12 years, but you can get, and when I talk about rich, I'm talking about, you know, financially independent. 10, 20 years of savings saved up. You can do it in 12 years if you do the things we're talking about here. But it's going to come slow. And most of that wealth is going to come in year what? 10, 11, and 12, right? The first 8, 9 years, you may be busting your butt thinking, I don't see any light at the end of that tunnel. But if you do these things diligently and you have a little bit of luck, you'll find out that you can build that wealth. So here's the other part. Here's earning. So we talked about you had to earn, save, and invest. And we'll break each of those down. Let's talk about the earning part. If you want to earn money, and this is whether you're running your own business or whether you're working for somebody, you've got to do these three things. Your earnings are based on the demand for that product or service that you're offering, the training that you had to have to deliver that product or service, and then the skill level that you apply it to, that you're able to do it at, right? So a lot of people can probably golf, but nobody can golf as good as like Tiger Woods. So he not only had the training, he had the skill that set him apart. He not only put in his 10,000 hours, he was just innately better at it than everybody else, okay? So I would tell you, as you look for that small business or the career to go into, depending upon, you know, where you're at in your life, you definitely want to focus on what you love, what you like, but you also want to focus on what you're good at, okay? And chances are, if you're good at something, you like it, but that's not always the case. So focus really on what you're good at. Everybody was created for, you know, a unique purpose, and you're different than anybody else. So that difference should give you an advantage, and you're working on that edge, right? That edge of between the forest and the meadow. What can you do that's different than everybody else that's better? And I think if you'll dig far enough, you'll find out what that is. The other side is demand. You have to do something where people want to pay for it. You know, you can go out and get a PhD in English literature, but you may not be able to get a job, okay? You can get the training and you can have a skill, but if there's no demand, you know, it doesn't matter. I like to tell people to think about the apprentice. If you're starting out in your career or that business, think in terms of an apprentice. What would an apprentice do? He's going to put in those 10,000 hours, start from scratch, start learning the basics, and build that training up so that you can develop the skill level. And like we talked about before, you want to get paid for your achievements, not by the hour. You don't want to sit down and figure out, boy, if I could only make $30 an hour, I'd be rich. You want to sit down and say, I want to make $200,000 a year. How am I going to do that? And what kind of service, what kind of product and service can generate bottom line income of $200,000. If you start from that premise rather than the hour part, you'll be able to pinpoint those products out better. Okay, now savings, on the savings part of the equation. Again, very easy, but people don't get this, right? The only way you're going to save is if you consume less than you earn. So you have to consume, or excuse me, you have to earn, you have to have that job, you have to earn, and then to be a saver, you have to cut back on that consumption. In our example of Country Club Carl, he was making $250,000 a year. He had nothing. And again, I'm telling you that from experience, without giving you personal information about people I know or not, but I meet plenty of people that are in their 40s or 50s that are making a lot of money, a lot more money than maybe many in this room would make, and they have nothing, okay, nothing. And they're like, John, can you invest? You know, I'm making $400,000. I'm an attorney, blah, blah, blah. Can you invest? I'm like, what do you have to invest? Well, nothing. You know, what's equity in your house? Well, nothing. You know, well, I'm paying off my car. They have zero. And it's because they live a very big lifestyle. Whenever you see someone with the very expensive things, saw studies where only 30% of the people can afford it. So 30% of the people have the cash flow to pay for it, or have the wealth to pay for it. The other 30% have the cash flow, meaning that they have the paycheck, but they're living paycheck to paycheck. And then the other 30% of the people, it's just on credit cards, and they don't even have the money. They're just trying to look rich. So don't be fooled by the people that look like they have money. Many of them don't. So you have to cut back on your consumption. Now, when it comes to whether you're an investor as a saver, again, everybody's pitching to you and marketing to you about being an investor. Nobody's really telling you to save. Dave Ramsey, probably one of the few people that tells you to save. Everybody else is telling you to be an investor. Invest in this mutual fund. Put money away in your retirement account. Whatever, right? You're always heard with that. Millionaires are investors, okay? Thousandaires, they're savers. My kids would say that when they're little kids. Yeah, Dad, I'm a thousandaire, you know? Saving up their money. I don't know where the difference is, where that edge is between being a millionaire saver and being a thousandaire investor. You're like, where you bridge that gap. But at some point, because if you have $1,000, you're not an investor, okay? If you have $1 million, chances are you are an investor. So I can't tell you for you personally whether it's $50,000, $100,000, where that point is for you where you become an investor. But don't think in terms of yourself as an investor if you don't have a decent nest egg. Think of yourself in terms of a saver. Quit trying to chase like yield and say, well, where can I get 10% of my money? Well, you know, if you only have $1,000 and you get a 10% return on it, so what? You got $100. I mean, that's any of you could go out this afternoon and come up with $100 somehow. You could go out and find, you know, do some kind of product or service to get $100. Not all of us could go out and get a 10% return in the stock market. It's difficult to do that. So if you have $1 million and you get a 10% return, you're talking about pretty good money now. But you're not going to get a decent return if you don't have that nest egg, if you don't have that big capital to work for you, okay? So don't focus on the investing part. And I'm an investment guy. I'm telling you this. Don't focus on the investing part. Focus on the savings and the earnings. That's where you want to be. And investing in yourself, those things we talked about in zone one, your preps, your emergency fund, your tools and getting an education, improving your home, right? Their homestead. That's the stuff that's going to build wealth the fastest. It's going to give you the earnings part that's going to allow you someday to be closer to that millionaire where you can be an investor. Your money can't work for you if you don't have any money, right? You want that to ultimately be the goal, but if you don't have the money, it's not going to happen. And again, so the financial industry, why do they want you to think you're an investor? So they can charge you fees, right? Because if you have $1,000, someone will be happy to take that from you and charge you a fee for it. Whether it's, you know, a checking account, your bank, or a mutual fund, or your 401k plan, or whoever, Edward Jones, someone's going to take your $1,000, and you're not going to get a return on it, but they'll be happy to take your money and charge you a fee. Now, on the investment income side, this is where we want our money to work for us, but if you don't have any money, it's not going to work for you. Let's talk a little bit about how that works. The people that I know that have made money have done it through stocks, real estate, and small business. Those are the three big ones. And if you remember that one chart I had where I had you in the middle and I had six or seven things going around it, there was stocks up there, there was real estate, there was business. It's not any one of those, okay? You want to have, you may be more preference to building your small business, or you may like more dealing with real estate, you know, whatever preference you have, but you want to stack functions. You want to integrate these, not segregate them. You want to figure out a way to make all them work together for you. So in my particular case, I don't like owning rental property, but I do like owning stocks. So I have a lot of my wealth in stocks because I like trading stocks. Real estate, I own my own home. I don't have a mortgage. I own my own home. I say I rent to myself. I say that metaphorically. I really don't rent to myself, but in a sense, that's what I do. I'm the best tenant I'm ever going to have, right? So I live in my house. I take care of it. I don't punch holes in the walls. That's my real estate property, and I own it outright. And then I created my own small business as my investment firm. So those are the three, you know, stools on the three legs on the stool that I think will work for you. But many of you now, you need to focus on that small business part before you move into the real estate or the stocks. And as far as, again, I'll bring up that old age. I'm not talking retirement. I hope nobody retires. I hope we all live doing what we love to do till the day we die. I saw, you know, most of my grandparents and people do that. Those are the happiest people, the people that love doing what they're doing. So don't think in terms of when I retire, I'm saving for retirement. Think in terms of saving for your old age. And that gets back to this stuff. You want to have your home paid for, or wherever you're living, you want that to be paid for, so you're just worrying about food and utilities. You would like to have stocks, because that's your money's going to be working for you. It's going to be paying you dividends and interest. And if you have that small business, there's no mandatory retirement when you own the company, right? So you can have a small business. You can keep working there until the day you die. So middle class wealth. If you want to be, what I would consider a millionaire next door, a middle class millionaire, it's open to all of you. I don't care how old you are at this point in your life. As bad as things are in our economy, as crappy as maybe our freedoms have been taken away from us, it's still possible, okay? But you have to have these disciplines, and we're going to talk a little bit more about these. The things you need to know about how to do it as a middle class person, if you're assuming that you're not going to get an inheritance or you're not going to win the lottery or something, The two ways to do it is one is what I'll call trading your time for money, right? And that's working. That's when you're a wage slave. You go to a job, you get paid, and you're making $10 an hour, and you're trying to figure out how to make 12. And when you make 12, you try and figure out how to make 15, right? And you keep working on that. And that's good. You will eventually build wealth that way if you're a diligent saver, right? But you really have to focus on it. And that's what my grandparents did. They were, you know, little education. My one grandparents were immigrants, so they had a hard time, but they were still able to support themselves in old age because even though they didn't make a lot of money, they were very disciplined savers and they always worked to try and earn more. That's the hard route. The next thing to do is to develop investment income. And this is where we'll talk about whether it's in stocks or real estate or small business. But that's where your money works for you and you don't work for your money. And that's much easier to do because now you're not getting paid by the hour. You're getting paid for the results of your mind, of how you're putting your earnings to work for you. And so the best way to get wealthy, though, is to, again, we're stacking functions. Do both of those at the same time. Start out earning a wage, be a good saver, and then figure out how to develop that investment income. The best thing for any of us to do, in my opinion, as middle-class Americans, is to start a small business. Okay, we'll talk more about that. But again, in the practices I see, with my clients, those that have small businesses are the people that have the most money. More money than professionals, more money than the executives, more money than the doctors or the lawyers, unless those doctors or lawyers are like in private practice. But it's the plumber, it's the electrical contractor, it's the guy that pours cement, it's the guy that runs a local specialty store. You know, those small business guys, those are the ones that have the wealth. And again, we'll talk about why that's possible.
Well, that'll wrap up part one of this series. Please join us next time for episode 45. Where in part two, we'll talk about stock trading and specifically discuss using moving averages to gauge market momentum. Again, this will be done from a permaculture perspective and we'll interject, when appropriate, with some of the design principles such as observe and interact and respond to change. So you won't want to miss that episode. As always, if you have any questions or concerns or you'd like to leave me a message, you can do so at wealthsteading.com. And thanks again to all of you that have made an effort to go out to iTunes, to subscribe to the show, to leave ratings and reviews. I really appreciate your efforts. I wouldn't be able to grow this community without you. We'll see you on the next episode. This is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.